They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, joining us today, we have, I'm really excited to have this lady. Donna Fossum is an attorney and a PhD who lives in Alexandria and has been there for a long time, Alexandria, Virginia. She's written an absolutely phenomenal paper, and you can read that on thefossumfiles.org. And if you are on my website or if you get the promo, I will have a link there. But I would highly recommend that you go in and read it because it is one of the most complete and complex studies and analysis of what we deal with quite a bit here. Donna, thank you so very much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Donna, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about the differences of ownership. And every time I talk to you, you want to make sure that I understand that HOAs are different than condos and co-ops. So tell us a little bit about the differences.
Well, the main ones that I deal with are condominiums and HOAs. We only have one co-op in all of Alexandria. And a condominium is actually governed by state law, the Condominium Act. And I happen to live in a high-rise condominium. And in condominiums, the owners basically own airspace. They don't own structure. So the only thing they have got control over is the interior walls of where they live. Everything else is held in trust in a condominium association, and that is the grounds, the building, the everything around them. And in an HOA, a homeowners association, the actual owners own their structure. It's a townhouse or maybe an individual house, what have you. And what they share in common is usually the grounds around them that connect, that surround the structures that are on site. So they're owning different kinds of things, so they have different kinds of concerns between the HOAs and condominiums. In a co-op, everything, like I said, I only have limited exposure to that. Everything is done as a cooperative, so the ownership and the building structures are essentially owned by everybody, and you plan accordingly.
In a co-op, you actually own shares in a,
yes,
in a corporation,
yes,
which gives you a proprietary lease, which allows you, based on the number of shares you own,
right,
to occupy one of the units.
Right.
In a condominium, though, it is the collectively the owners own everything, right?
Yes. It's owned in trust.
It's owned in trust. And the homeowners association, the individuals own their individual property, and the association owns all the common areas?
Correct.
Wow. What a complicated life we lead, right? Just to live in a house?
Well, it is. And, yeah, it's been this, it became this way about 1965, in the early 70s. This was the way that all the development has happened since then, because it allows cities and counties and the jurisdictions around the country to expand their tax base without spending a lot of tax dollars, because it's the HOA or it's the condominium, that is actually spending the money on the infrastructure for the most part. Previously, the city provided that.
So in the old days, Donna, the city had the infrastructure in place, the streets, the sidewalks, the sewer lines.
Right, the water parks, yeah, everything.
And all of that was built first?
That was put in place, and that's why we have a street grid. That's how you get the street grid, because that's where they laid the water pipes, the sewer pipes, what have you. They're underneath the streets for the most part. And then you'd buy your individual lot, and you'd build your structure on it. And that ended in basically the late 60s, early 70s. The cities couldn't keep up with the demand, so that is when the individual developers or landowners of major property were allowed to proceed building and provide the infrastructure themselves. And that is where we've got these common interest developments. That's what they are.
So, all right. So you've got the common interest developments. You've got the developer who comes in and builds the streets and all of that. Do you need all of the governance that goes along with it?
Well, their plan is that it's a mini-city, essentially. You've got to have your internal rules and regs, what have you. I'm not sure people have actually stepped back and contemplated whether or not you need all the governance. It just was the way they did it.
See, with condominiums here in this country, you've got all of these rules and regulations. I mean, I've heard of some really, really silly ones. You cannot go out dressed in, you cannot go out in the hallway in your flip-flops because you might devalue property values. You can't go across the hall to your neighbors and ask for a cup of sugar if you've got hair rollers. I mean, some of the most ludicrous things.
I would say they are not germane. I mean, the rules that are germane are the ones that actually affect the operation of the facility and the integrity of the building.
But I think in this country we flipped things on its tail because in Europe you've got all these old buildings that have been there for hundreds of years and the owners own their units and the owners get together once a year and the owners hire a manager and tell the manager what to do instead of having a manager come in and start checking to see if you're out in your flip-flops and then fining you. I mean, that's the bit that I just cannot.
Well, that's not universal either. I mean, the condominium I live in, if that were a rule, it would be gone quickly.
No, and it's not universal, but it's across, I mean, there are enough of them there. So, but you've got the manager that basically rules over everything.
That's not how they're designed. The manager is to implement what the board tells them.
Right.
And if you've got a very weak board, they're not going to know what to tell you. Or an experienced board, they're not going to know. But the one that's the professional that is in the industry is clearly the manager of the condominium.
And that's true.
And they're the employee of the condominium.
That's the way it's supposed to be, and it's the board that makes the decisions, not the owners.
Correct.
So the owners, okay. Now, there are two, you've made it very, very clear that you want to make sure there's a huge separation when we talk about condos, HOAs, and co-ops, but collectively they come under sort of a mandatory membership form of ownership, regardless of whether it's a co-op or a condo or a single-family home. Can we find a word that we can use to cover that?
The word that is used in the judicial or the academic world is common interest development.
CID, okay. So we talk about CIDs.
Correct.
And it's interesting because even between states, they have different words, and some of them are common interest development, some of them are common interest communities.
Correct.
Some of them are residential associations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can understand where the confusion comes from.
It's massive.
It's huge. Would it make a difference if we had the same language?
It would probably be helpful to at least have a translation as to, are the words just different, or do they actually mean something different? And as far as, I guess we do have national organizations that deal with common interest developments, but I don't think any of them have actually looked at doing a definition policing, which is what you're talking about.
Well, I just want to make sure that everyone's on the same page.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's important. Very important.
And we're not. And then the other thing that's so totally different that you talk about in your paper, and that's the civic associations.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about a civic association.
Well, a civic association is where the entities, the residential units that are not in, traditionally, are not in any of the common interest developments. They're not an HOA. They're not a CID, they're not a condo, they're not a co-op. That's how they've organized themselves, civic associations. And they're the privately owned dwellings in each of the cities. And they're usually communities that have some name or something. They're some traditionally maybe around a school or a park or someplace. And in order to deal with City Hall, they have organized and call themselves a civic association. They are purely voluntary, and the one critical difference between a civic association and a common interest development, be it an HOA or a condo or a co-op, is that they can ebb and flow. There's no mandatory nature to a civic association. It is purely voluntary. And here in Alexandria, we have some civic associations that sort of fade away for a decade at a time, and then somebody else comes to the front, or an issue resurfaces, or a new one shows up, and they reorganize and show up again. But in the meantime, they've just gone away. You can't do that with a condo association or an HOA association, the homeowners association. They're mandatory. They have to be there.
You did a lot of research, and you discovered that the city of Alexandria was basically, and we're going to use the city of Alexandria as an example because the same thing happened across the country in different jurisdictions. But because your paper and your research and analysis is around the city of Alexandria, talk about the two halves and the taxing and the double taxation, if you will.
Well, what happened in Alexandria, because of the way the land was acquired that is now comprises the city, you basically have anybody familiar with Alexandria, is if you know where Quaker Lane is, it basically divides the east end of the city from the west end of the city. And the two ends of the city are relatively equal in geographic size and population. But in terms of the housing in both ends, they are totally different, because the West End was essentially open fields when it got annexed by the city in 1952. And as a result, virtually all the private housing out in the West End is new. It's relatively new. And because it was built after 65, 70, for the most part, it is common interest developments. Most of what's out here are condominiums. You definitely have homeowners associations out here, too. But 81% of the privately owned homes west of Quaker Lane are in common interest developments, whereas east of Quaker Lane, it's 40%. You've got very few, they're infill sites. Most everything that's privately owned east of Quaker Lane is purely between the owner of that property and the city. This is where the double taxation comes in, is because all the services, be they police protection, which is considered, they call them essential services. That's fire protection, police protection, schools. Those are the traditional essential services. Everybody gets those from the city, including HOAs and condos. The non-essential services, street cleaning, snow plowing, maintenance of the yards and the marginal strips of around streets, what have you, anything like that, is considered non-essential. and in the West End, where you've got all the HOAs and the condos, all that is paid for by the condos and the HOAs themselves through their fees. That's what the fees include. And meanwhile, as an owner of a condominium and an owner of a home in a homeowners association, I also pay city taxes. So I'm actually paying for the non-essential services of the people who don't live in HOAs or condos through my taxes. But people who don't live in HOAs or condos are not helping pay for any of my non-essential services. I pay for those myself out of my condo and my HOA fee. So I'm being double taxed.
And if you went to the city and said, hey, wait a minute, you know, we need you to get in here and we need you to plow the streets and we need you to do that because we are paying, you're taxing us for those services. You're going to have the other homeowners say, why should we come in? That's private. You chose to live in that. Is there a solution? I mean, I've watched this happen, what's the answer, Donna?
Well, what happened here, which is interesting, is that about 30 years ago, right after the condos were starting to become rather common around here, a person who actually lived in the condo that I now live in noticed that he was being charged twice for trash pickup, once in his city taxes and once in his condo fee. And so he went down to City Hall and organized some of the other condos around here, and that became a big issue. They acknowledged that there was a problem. And the basic problem that one of the bigger problems is that those of us in HOAs and condos, we weren't there when they negotiated the ground rules.
Right.
That was the developer.
Yeah.
And they just gave them to us as a condition of our ownership.
Yeah.
And so we get this in order to buy this. I mean, if you want to live in the West End of Alexandria, you either live in a common interest development or you live somewhere else because there's nothing else out here to buy for the most part.
Yeah.
And that's true through cities around the country. If you want a new, if you want anything built in the last 30 years, it's going to be a common interest development. Well, what happened here with the trash pickup is that the city acknowledged that there was a problem. They made a big enough stink. They got organized out here. And no pun intended with the trash and the stink. But they first started, the city first tried to give rebates to the condominiums.
Oh.
And that didn't work. They couldn't figure out the actual amount that quite jived with anything. And so ultimately what the city ended up doing was removing trash pickup from its list of city-provided services for everybody. And so now a private owner, a homeowner who doesn't live in an HOA or a condo, pays separately for their trash pickup from the city. And all the condos and HOAs also pay separately for their trash pickup. So that got leveled. So the one way that I've recommended that if you want to level this playing field of double taxation is charge all the private homeowners for their non-essential services, any of the non-essential services other than fire protection, police protection, and schools, charge them separately on their monthly bill or their whatever, however you want to do it, for the non-essential services, which is street cleaning, snow removal, you go on down the list, so that everybody's paying knowingly for those services. That raises the possibility that maybe they don't want to buy it from the city. That's happened here with trash pickup. We have the opportunity to either buy it from the city as an arm's length contract, or we can buy it from some other private provider if they've got a better deal. So that's an opportunity there. But that's the one way to get out of the double taxation, is to charge everybody for the non-essential services directly.
What happened when the city did that? Was there a reduction in the taxes, in the tax rate, once they removed it, or did they continue taxing and saying, all right, we're just not going to provide that anymore?
I honestly don't know what happened to the tax rate. I really seriously doubt, you know, I'm guessing at this point, I really seriously doubt the tax rate would go down.
Yeah.
You know, they don't go that direction.
Yeah, I know.
But the fact is that at least they got that out of there so that all the condo owners and HOA owners were not paying twice to get their they were paying twice for trash pickup, once for their own, and then subsidizing everybody else's.
Well, my guess is that once the city has that money, that stream of money coming in, mm-hmm. they're not going to say, oops, sorry. You know, they're just going to say, all right, we're just not going to provide it, so you go ahead and buy it for yourselves.
Well, it will be interesting to see when the light goes on of what's happening here. The awareness of double taxation, I don't think, is that terribly widespread. Most people who've bought homes in the last 30 years just assume that this is the way you do it, and they don't step back and analyze the budgets of the city and, you know, their condo or their HOA and look at what's duplicative. As word spreads, I mean, the people that I know who have read my analysis, they come back steaming. You know, they're angry that they're not getting a fair deal.
I know that in some states, Community Associations Institute,
okay.
attorneys have gone to local municipalities
mm-hmm.
and have said, look, this is not fair. But they've negotiated with the local municipality that they will reimburse the association, the condominium, the, mm-hmm. the whatever it is, for trash removal.
Mm-hmm.
But they've also signed a paper promising that they will never, ever come back and want to renegotiate anything. This is it. So they're getting their trash removal paid for by the city or reimbursed by
mm-hmm.
the city. But they've also promised that, hey, we'll just go ahead and do the snow removal. We'll, you know, all of the other stuff that they're being double taxed, that's still going to go on because part of the deal was that they agreed with the city that, hey, you do this, you take up our trash, we won't do anything else. We won't ask for anything else.
Well, I'm not familiar with these agreements, but if the CAI has made that agreement, I would be curious to know what agreement the CAI had with the actual individual condos. And
none.
Not so the fact is the individual condos and HOAs could go back and negotiate differently. It was only the CAI that said, we're not going to bother you anymore.
That's a good point. It's always great to talk to an attorney who mm-hmm. has the other side. So thank you. Yeah. No, I've talked to some of the attorneys in the CAI attorneys
mm-hmm.
in other states, and they've told me this. They they thought this was such a great deal that
mm-hmm.
this is what we did. Now wait a minute.
Right. You only did part of it.
Wait a minute. That's not fair. You can't go in and sign an agreement. Now, I don't know if they took all this paperwork back to the individual associations and said, sign here.
My suspicion is they probably didn't, because the CAI was representing them sort of as the big brother or the protector.
I like that word.
You know, and they were doing this as a community outreach activity. It was not a contractual agreement between the condos and HOAs that they were helping and the CAI.
We're talking to Donna Fossum, who has written one of the most complete and interesting analysis of condominiums, cooperatives, homeowner associations, and also civic associations. And she's compared two halves of the city and how they operate. Donna, one of the most fascinating things that you talk about is elections.
Yeah.
You want to tell us a little bit about that? I thought that was just incredible.
Well, this is what sort of piqued my curiosity, because I've been very active in the city for the 30 plus years I've been here. But it wasn't until I got really involved in one city council election. I actually ran for city council, and I didn't win. I, I came in, I think, sixth. I was like one slide outer. But what happened was I was watching the dynamics of that election, and I said, there's something very strange happening here, because the entire election for city council, which is citywide, was going on essentially in the eastern two-thirds of the city. The western part of Alexandria, where I live, wasn't included in the election.
Not at all?
It was not really. I mean, we would get postcards and things like that, but there were very few events. There was no yard signs. You didn't hear from anybody. They just ignored us. And it wasn't just ignoring us. It was when I started looking at it. The fact is that most city races, local races, are based on personal contact. You want to go bang on people's doors. You go door to door and explain who you are and, you know, talk with them, what have you. You can't go door to door. And most of the condominiums out in this particular far west part of Alexandria, because they're high security buildings. Anybody who's wandering the hallways here, banging on doors, introducing themselves, liable to get arrested for trespassing. You can't put a sign out in our front yard because that's common property. It's not public property. And nobody here has the authority to put a candidate sign in the front entry park, because who are they going to support, you know? So you say nobody. You know, nobody can put anything out there, including residents. We have been left out of the traditional election process, which in a city like Alexandria was based on going door to door and often going to, like, farmers markets, stuff like that. You know, out here, candidates in the West End can go to the West End farmers market, but that doesn't mean they're going to meet a lot of people. And furthermore, the farmers markets may not jive with the dates of the election. So it's iffy. So what happened is that if you look at the election, the voting, the actual voting counts in Alexandria by East End versus West End, for city council races, there were 50% of the votes in the West End that there were in the East End. We voted half as often in city council races as people east of Quaker Lane. What was striking was I also compared the votes for the gubernatorial race and races in presidential. From the same years, same parts of the city, there wasn't that discrepancy. The percentage of voters in both ends of the city was relatively equal for gubernatorial and presidential elections. It was only the local elections that are run differently, or we ran into problems. I'm not sure what the solution to that is, but if we're going to get represented, we need to have somebody who knows how to operate according to what we work like out in the far West End. And one thing I know is that you can get newspapers, you can get the little tabloids into the buildings in the West End. So I, years ago, helped with a city council race from a lady who actually lives in one of the high-rise condos. And so we printed our own newspaper, and we got stacks of them stuck into each of the buildings so people could look at them. That was okay. We've got to adjust our institutions for the way that we've changed our dwelling units. And what came with the last 200 years of how you run in city council doesn't work for high-rise and high-security buildings.
Do the residents feel like they're left out? It almost sounds like city council is distancing themselves.
I'm not sure they even know it, because the gap, the people who run the city live in single-family detached homes or townhouses that are not part of a homeowners association. They're not part of this new development. And I think one member of city council lives in a condominium. No, actually two. Take that back. There's two. And everybody else lives in private, the traditional kind of living where you don't deal with, if you've got a problem, the response is not to call your condo office or your HOA office. It's to go to City Hall. It affects who you look for to, or who you look to, I guess, is better, for services. If I have a problem in my condo, I'm not going to call City Hall. I'm going to call the office downstairs. Same in an HOA. In the eastern half of the city of Alexandria, if you've got a problem with your home, you call City Hall. And we haven't adjusted our electoral process or any of our other institutions to deal with the fact that we've changed who's giving you the services directly. And as a result, you're probably more concerned about who's going to get elected to your HOA board than you are city council.
Quite often there's just so much apathy in HOAs. I mean, CAI had been sending out all these notices about nobody's running, and if we don't have a board, then, you know, the whole thing's going to collapse. But I don't see that quite in City Hall or County. There are always numerous candidates.
Well, it's a public office that you get paid to be in. You're not going to make a living off of it, but you do get remunerated for services you provide, and it's a big deal because everybody gets involved in the local elections, or should. At least you're aware of it to some extent. In your condo board, what have you. Most people thought they were just buying a place to live.
Carefree living, right?
Exactly. And they didn't understand at the time that carefree living means that somebody among you has to run for the board and operate the quote-unquote the facilities, and at the very least, you're the ones that hire the manager and make sure they're doing their job, and you put the budget together to get the condo fees and the HOA fees. Nobody is paying you. There's no training. It doesn't come with buying your home. So you're purely at the whim of whoever buys into a unit. I mean, here, I happen to live in the Hallmark, and right after, I was not here for the first 2 or 3 years of the, I bought in here about 3 years after the place was open. And I gather that the swimming pool was not built quite correctly, and the original swimming pool, and it wouldn't hold water, which is rather essential for, you know. For
you think? Yeah. You don't want to dive into an empty pool, right?
No, it cracked, so the water kept leaking out. So they had to replace the swimming pool quickly. And there was no replacement reserve because it was brand new. So they had one special assessment here to actually get the pool correctly done, and they went after the original developer. But we were fortunate here that one of our first owners was a retired colonel, and he took charge. That's what he did. And he was an Army colonel, and he led the group through the first couple of years to get this wrong righted. And since then, we've never had a special assessment. You know, we've got a budget put together that puts in replacement reserve. We've got a great reserve study, the whole thing. So this place runs along very smoothly. But because of where we are, or I don't know, just quirk of fate, we've had the blessing of having fully qualified leaders who just happened to buy a condo here. I'm not sure that happens.
It doesn't.
It doesn't. And also, they may be qualified, but are they willing?
It doesn't. It really doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And one of the concerns that I have is Habitat for Humanity. I think they do a tremendous job, but they're building all of these developments essentially with some form of CID attached.
Mm-hmm.
So people who are not able to buy a home without huge assistance are now being left in charge of trying to run a small town, in essence.
Good grief.
Yeah. It's really, really scary, and you sort of wonder what people are thinking. And it's not fair to them, because you've given them a leg up, you've helped them get into their first home, you've helped them in any way you can, and then you've just made it impossible for them to live.
Well, the one thing that I've thought about, knowing that we were going to be talking today, I sort of pondered, you know, what are the options we have? There is the reach of government in all of these CIDs.
Yes.
I mean, it was the deals were made between the cities and the developers, or the counties and the developers.
Right.
And then they sold them to the people who now own these units and said, have fun. And is it possible that each of the cities and counties should, from their own responsibility, have a division or a special office or a unit that is devoted to making sure that common interest developments actually work. That there is some place other than your next door neighbor and a fist fight in the parking lot, you know, to go that somebody can teach you or help you figure out what are your options.
Well, I know that Fairfax County has something in place, mm-hmm. but Fairfax County relies greatly on the Community Associations Institute.
Right.
And there's a huge conflict of interest there.
Yep.
There's an enormous conflict of interest. In fact, the county provides CAI with a mechanism, a means, to put on these TV shows
mm-hmm.
to tell you, you know, and it's the association attorneys who are running it and the managers. But there's no independent oversight. There's no one there to say, okay, you know, here's the problem. This is an issue. They're going to tell you, it's indoctrination from what I can see.
Well, I'm not familiar with the Fairfax office, and I'm quasi-familiar with CAI. But if there is a serious conflict, it's got to be resolved. And somebody in Fairfax needs to understand that they thought they were helping this group of homeowners, and they really haven't.
Their attitude is, it's a private agreement, you entered into it. You know, you shouldn't, if you didn't want it, don't do it. I suggested that we provide real disclosure as to what it is. It's not carefree living. It's not going to protect your property values.
It could. It's not a guarantee that it won't. But the fact is you cannot count on it to do it.
72% of CIDs across the country are not properly funded. Their reserves are not properly funded.
I can see that, because most people do not understand what their responsibilities are. Like I said, I happen to live in a condo that had a lot of very highly qualified people in it,
right.
And they understand it. So
yeah.
We're fine.
No, you're fine. But you know, you're not part of that 72%. And so when you end up with huge special assessments, that's not protecting your property values.
Oh, and you're never going to get all of them collected, because a lot of people don't have that kind of money.
But they'll just take your house from you. That's not a problem. They'll just foreclose.
Right.
And so you lose your house, and that's not protecting your property values.
No.
You know, we go around and around and around on this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the answer is.
Well,
one thing that
could be interesting is if people understand about the double taxation issue, what is the possibility of them withholding their taxes until they actually get some attention? You know?
I think that's a great idea. I think it's going to have to be very well organized by someone, a good leader, who's going to be able to say, all right, guys, you know, we want what we pay for. Some years ago, and again, I'm going to Fairfax, kind of just like you're going to Alexandria, because that's what you know, but the homeowners were being taxed on the HOA income that was coming in. There was property taxes, that's right. The county was charging the homeowners property taxes on common property. So the way they figured it out was, if you have, you know, the zoning was, however much the zoning was, that's what you were being taxed on, not what you actually owned. And somebody went to court and said, wait a minute, we're being double taxed there. So they dropped that. And that was, oh, I don't know, about 20 years ago, 25 years ago. So there's been this complete, you know, constant double taxation. They'll do anything. They'll get in there.
I don't think they're bad. I don't think the motives are bad. I think the fact is they don't totally understand how we are different, and that we have got a different, the money flows differently out here, and we have a separate government beyond the local government.
Yes.
And that also has taxing authority, and actually that one affects us more directly than the county or the city.
Right.
And the educational process has failed, and I don't think the real homeowners, it sounds like maybe CAI, they're well-intentioned, and they definitely do a service, but do they represent the homeowners?
No. They claim to, but no. But I think you've got an excellent point, that it's the educational process that has failed. There's a lot of misinformation and misunderstandings about what people get, and we just talked about one of them, which was, you know, it was carefree living.
Well, and
which
they
clearly
also,
it isn't.
Yeah, and also we've got a lot of people that don't even really understand what they bought.
No, they don't. It's all that's available. In Alexandria, you've got about half and half. I think the estimate was over 90% of all housing in Fairfax. Over 90% mm-hmm. is in a CID. But if you go to some of the newer places further out,
it's 100%.
It's much greater. You know, you might find a little old house that's been there for 100 years. But somebody's going to come in and say, oh, you got a lot of land here. We're just going to clear that out, and we're going to give you all this money, and we're going to take it and mm-hmm. turn it into an HOA.
Well, what we're counting on here, which you began to articulate a few minutes ago, was the presumption that just assuming that these people are going to have a government that's going to emerge. People are going to volunteer to run for the board. They're going to serve with integrity and longevity, what have you. They're going to do right. They're going to know what they need to do. That's a presumption that nobody researched. You know, nobody can prove it's going to happen. And indeed, we've got lots of evidence that it isn't happening. And so how we put these governing boards together and the handoff documents, I would say, when the developer walks away from the development and says, okay, homeowners, you're on your own, condo owners, you know, now you own over half of the units, you're in charge, have fun. That's about the handoff I fear that most places get. And what is the solution? Unlike actual local governments, there is no constitution or state charter or whatever, or city charter that sets up the organization and the order, what have you. And the presumption that people want to serve in these offices, there's no compensation. We have this big hole that I'm not sure we've ever articulated correctly and raised to the point of this is a crisis.
I think you're absolutely correct. I think what they'll say is it's a contractual agreement.
Mm-hmm.
You agreed to it, so have fun. Don't bother us with the details.
Right.
We don't care. We don't want to know about it.
Well, and the one power they've got is the double taxation.
And the fact that your constitutional rights don't typically, I mean, they say you can give away you can sign away your constitutional rights, but I want to go back to when you were talking about running for city council and on the west side of Alexandria, where you were not able to put signs up, you were not able to do anything to let people know that you were a candidate or who the candidates were or who you supported or anything. I mean, that has come out as being a First Amendment issue in a lot of cases across the country. But even if you don't have property and you can't put it in the lobby, you do have windows and balconies.
And that's illegal.
And it's illegal?
Mm-hmm. You can't put signs on your balcony or your windows.
In the city of Alexandria?
No, in in my condo. I think it goes with the condo docs.
Okay, so it's not illegal in the sense that it's a real government. It's the condominium.
Yes, it's still without the contract.
So there was a, I mean, this has come up more than once. Her first name was Cheryl, and she ran for some office locally in Maryland a number of years ago, and she put a Vote for Cheryl sign up on her balcony or in her window, and of course the condo said, hey, you can't do that. It's against the rules, and she says, it's my First Amendment right, and I'm running. And unfortunately for the condominium, and CII attorneys were jumping up and down going, oh, that's not fair. It's going to make it look like the backside of a refrigerator. What the backside of a refrigerator looks like, I have no idea. But
and it's got little white boxes of stickers all over it, so it looks a little bit junky.
I mean, free speech doesn't have to be pretty. Unfortunately for the condo, she won. And the first thing she did was she introduced legislation that prohibits condominiums, and I think, I'm not sure what county, at Montgomery County, or that prohibits condominiums from banning election material, campaign signs, during campaigns. So you could place it. I mean, she overrode the condo docs or the condo rules or whatever it was. But yeah, she said, wait a minute, you need to be able to campaign properly. So if we're going to change the structure, the physical structure of our cities, I think we're going to have to provide some way.
Well, that's what I was saying earlier.
Yeah.
We've got to adjust the institutions that go with our city to reflect and recognize that the kinds of homeowners we have now are different than the ones we had 50 years ago or 100 years ago. And we've got to allow them to participate in the civic events, like elections, what have you, that may require adjusting some of our previous rules.
But I think we also have to prioritize what's important. I mean, if you're going to cut off every avenue for people to participate, what do we end up with at the end?
Well, we've got to be talking about a specific matter here, not generically.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, if you're looking at, go back to the civic associations and the way traditional housing really was, where you bought a chunk of land and you built your house on it, and if you wanted to put a Vote for Donna Fossum sign in your front yard, then you did. Nobody was going to bother you. If you wanted to plant a tree or six rose bushes, you know, nobody was going to come up with silly rules and things like that. But that's, you know, that's a personal private expression, right?
It's your private land.
It's your private land. And that's the difference, isn't it?
That's the difference.
That's the difference.
I don't own this land that surrounds my condo building myself. I co-own it with a bunch of other people. And as a result, the question arises as to, is there a way, I don't think we've ever had this discussion yet, is there a way that we can adjust some of our traditional rules of operating to accommodate these new kinds of homeownership so that they too can participate in civic events and have their way of doing things?
If we don't do that, Donna, and we transform, which is what we're doing, is going in and finding the older developments because there's more land there, and of course if we tear it down and we build condos, we can generate more income for the county, which is what they're going to want. But is there a way we can do that? I mean, should we start thinking in terms of making this, going back to the old-fashioned way of having people get involved with the local government?
Well,
or do we just say never mind?
You know, the question is who's going to do it? It's going to take some citizens to raise this issue. I mean, how have things operated in the past? How did we learn about things? Somebody became the spokesperson, and they went to either the city hall or county hall, what have you, and started educating people, going to open mics during city council meetings or what have you, and saying, hey, we've got a problem here. And they took it upon themselves to become the spokesperson. And then more people said, hey, that makes sense, and hopped on, what have you. And it's not going to happen overnight. And there's a huge education part here that I don't think has even started, essentially. Like, I've been struck by the number of people who really don't understand, who live in either an HOA or a condo, who don't understand the double taxation issue. And because the only world they see, everybody's paying an HOA fee or a condo fee. They don't understand that they're also paying for a lot of the same stuff in their taxes. We've got to change people's way of thinking, both inside the government as well as outside, before this gets enough momentum that we're going to have something to really talk about and negotiate over.
What's next for Donna Fossum? I mean, your analysis is phenomenal. It's a great eye-opener. What's next? Are you going to look into the educational process, how that's going to work, what we need to do, how we can bring everybody together?
I'm watching, since this paper's been out for, 2 weeks now, 10 days, and I'm watching the reaction of who contacts me and what have you, and like I mentioned earlier, the several people who have contacted me, they were angry. They did not understand these are people who live in either an HOA or a condo, and they were like, one lady put it, she said, every time I turned a page, my blood pressure went up. And so I know that they're passing the word about this analysis, and I know the gentleman who is Evan McKenzie,
right,
who's like the scholar and the authority in this area. He was blown away by this analysis.
Yeah.
And so word is starting to get out there, and I don't think we've quite gotten a critical mass together of, so what do we do about it? I'm not spending full time marketing this right now or telling the world about it, but I'm not bashful about suggesting people read it. So at this point in time, I'm sort of waiting to see if this takes off on its own, and if so, how, or what else, you know, could be done out there to spread the word. And after, I'm going to give it a little time, and let's see what happens. We didn't get into this situation overnight.
No, we didn't.
And we're not going to get out of it, you know, overnight either. But we have fundamentally changed the operational basics of local institutions, of cities, counties, what have you. And nobody's stepped back to look at that and even acknowledge that we've done that, much less think about the ramifications of it in terms of service provision, taxation, anything, governance. We have got to do some serious soul searching, I think. And to date, I gather that the people that most people think are doing this already is the CAI.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the education, is to learn what is the CAI doing? And are they representing neutrality?
Yeah.
Whose side are they on? I don't think many of them, and I put myself in that category, I'm not up to speed with exactly what they're doing. And that's probably the next thing I'll be looking at.
They're getting more and more close. But Donna, we are out of time, and I want to thank you so much for coming on, and I hope you will come back.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And tell us what you've been up to some more.
Well, I will, and thank you ever so much.
Thanks.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.